I have a question, as always. How is it that Paul became an apostle? He really should not have been. Paul was not a man who should have been in any kind of position with God at all. How is it that he became an apostle? This was a bad guy. We talked about him. He had killed a lot of people. He used to persecute them by getting permission from the church in Jerusalem, the Jewish church in Jerusalem, the Sanhedrin. And he would get permission to go into different countries and kidnap people. And then he would drag them back to Jerusalem and kill them. How is it that this man became an apostle? Yeah.
How better off for someone to glorify God and proclaim His goodness than the guy that persecuted him?
Good answer. Let me ask you this then. How is it that David became a king?
Because it was God's will.
Was it God's will, really?
It's part of His plan.
Part of His plan. But is a part of His plan necessarily the same as His will?
Not always.
Okay. Your answers are good, but I'm always going to challenge them. Okay. David was not intended to be the king. Saul was, and his descendants were intended to be the king. David was, in a sense, Plan B. How is it that this little guy, and he was not a big fellow, he was a little fellow, and he was not very mighty, he was very small. How is it that he became the king who, when Saul killed thousands, David killed tens of thousands? Saul was very big. Physically, his stature was very big. Or how is it that Gideon was chosen to be one of the leaders of Israel, a judge in Israel? Because Gideon was a nowhere kind of guy from a nowhere kind of place. How is it that he was chosen? It's kind of a strange thing with God. A lot of what God does makes no sense. And it's that way by design. In 1 Corinthians 1:27, how is it that God uses foolish things instead of wise things? And not only does He use foolish things, He uses the foolish things against the wise things. How is that? Now, how is it, like, if we think science, how is it that God takes this dinky little planet on the far side of the galaxy and makes it His footstool? It doesn't really make much sense. But, you know, that's the beautiful thing about God. God is not in the making sense business. You see, to our minds, very little about God will make sense. You'll go and you'll live like a Christian, and you forsake a lot of things because you live like a Christian. You forsake some fun because you want to be a Christian. You don't have to. You know, God is not going to make you, and He's not going to hate you for doing it if you don't. But you do. And the reason why you do is because you know in your heart that although that may be okay, it is not the good part. It is not that which is really beneficial to your soul. But you do it anyway. How is that? How is it that a young lady or a young man will decide to be pure? like walking around at work, sometimes it really kind of blows my mind. You know, the people who call themselves Christians and the things that I see them doing. The name and the action don't really match. But you know what God says? It's okay. You can have your portion here, or you can have your portion with me, but you will have a portion, and if this is the portion you want, you can have it. Now, how is it that God does these things? How is it that when I am weak, I am strong? That doesn't make any sense at all. I would like to be strong. I would like to have all kinds of wisdom, and I would like to have all kinds of ability. And I would like to have them, and I'd like to have them now, thank you. Because then I can get something done. Then I can apply myself, and I can do things, and I can go places, and hey, maybe I can even do it for the glory of God. And I want to be strong. And what's wrong with being strong? Nothing at all. Like, isn't God strong? Right? So why can't I just be strong? How is it that I have to die in order to live, and if I live, I die? Like, that makes no sense. Isn't that kind of weird? That's weird thinking to the world. Why should I lay down my life? I have only one of them. Why should I lay down my life? It's the foolishness of the cross. Why should I even go there? It makes no sense. But God is kind of different. You see, God's ways are not my ways, and God's thoughts are far above my thoughts, and the foolishness of God is greater than the wisdom of men. So although the world tells me that this is foolishness, it is the foolishness of God. You see, yes, it is foolish, but God's brand. And God's brand of foolishness is greater than the world's brand of wisdom. You see, those young folks who are doing things they ought not be doing are destroying their souls. They don't think about it. How is it that God says, don't be afraid in the face of a fiery furnace? What do you mean, don't be afraid? The fire burns. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I should be terrified. There's no way that I should want to go in that furnace. But those Hebrew boys thought differently. Those Hebrew boys weren't forced in. They say, if I perish, I perish, but my God is more than able. And the king was looking on. Those things make... How is it that hidden riches are in dark places? Why not just bring them out into the light? Why not just hand them out to everybody?
Because something's always more valuable if you have to look for it.
Maybe. But why?
Because you have to seek it.
Why?
It didn't. It's like if you go somewhere, like if you go to Colorado and you see the Rockies, it's amazing to you. And it's really a cool thing to do because you've had to go out of your way to get there. But people there don't really value it the same way. They guess it's right there. And they kind of take it for granted. If the riches of God's kingdom were all right out there in the open, right in front of us, we just begin to take them for granted. But instead, we have to seek them.
Do you really think so? I mean, look at the angels. They're face to face with God. Right? And they reverence Him. And they're very humble. You know, those who haven't fallen, they're very humble. Yeah.
If you desire something enough that you'll go and search for it, you desire it more than if you say, "Oh, since I have to look for it, I don't need it."
But can I truly say that I desire it? Is there something that I might want better? Like, hey, maybe this is better.
Yeah.
It's not a bad answer. It's a good answer. But I've got to kind of shake your little box a little. See, God has this thing. He puts you in the box and He starts to shake it up really good. And He tries to get these ideas out of our heads. And then He can start to teach us. You see, one of the things that I have learned with God, and one of the things that I have learned when I, you know, in studying, as I've been in college for much longer than most of you have been alive, is that the more I learn, the less I know. And at first I thought, hey, this is pretty cool. Yeah, I got a degree. I got a second degree. Third degree. At first they seemed kind of cool. It started dawning on me. I don't really know that much. Paul said, if any man thinks he knows anything, he knows nothing. As he ought to know it. Like, isn't that strange? You study for all these years and then all of a sudden you think you know something and then the Bible says, hey, you don't know anything. Well, what do you mean I don't know anything? I mean, lots of time and money. What do you mean I don't know anything? And God says, you don't know anything because the wisdom of God, I'm sorry, the wisdom of men is less than the wisdom of God. God's foolishness is greater. God chooses the foolish things to confound the wise. You see, the wisdom of this world is no wisdom whatsoever. The wisdom of this world says you gotta be strong, you gotta do it, you gotta be. Like, hey, don't waste your time. Don't waste your time. Let's say going to Bible college. I know there's a couple of people in this room who have that as a vision in their hearts. Don't waste your time with Bible college. It's foolishness. What in the world are you ever gonna do with that? Bible college is the greatest form of education you can possibly get. It's been going on since the early days, like day one. No, not really day one, I guess more like day six. It's been going on for a long time. Why? Because it's the greatest. Like, what greater can there be than getting the mind of Christ? Hey, don't waste your time. You've got better things to do on a Friday afternoon and a Friday evening. Don't waste your time. There's a football game going on. Go to a football game. Don't waste your time. A football game's fun. Yet somehow people are coming here and they say, no, the football game's not so hot. I'd rather have the thoughts of God. That doesn't make any sense. Well, what good are the thoughts of God? It's just a crutch. Yeah, it is. It's a crutch. I need crutches. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians 12:10. Now this passage makes absolutely no sense. There is no wisdom to this. In a sense, it's kind of stupid if you think about it. It says, therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distress for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. What sense does that make? I don't take pleasure in infirmities or persecutions. I try to get away from them. Now, let's take a look at these words. Infirmities. Infirmities talks about a genus. Biology kind of word. And there's two species of infirmities that it's talking about. There's infirmities coming from Satan's messengers, and infirmities coming from men. Reproaches, the insolence or the insult, a pride and a haughtiness, a mental injury and wantonness of its affliction being prominent. Like people scoff at you, they mock you, they make fun of you. Hey, what are you doing? Oh, come on. What do you mean you're not going to date? How stupid is that? How are you ever going to find anybody? You go out, just go out. You know, and if you don't, they start to ridicule you. Or what do you mean you're going to not take that job? You're going to, you know, so that you don't have... What do you mean you're going to travel all this way just to hear it? What do you mean? That's stupid. Necessities, either imposed by circumstances or by the law of a duty, regardless of one's advantage, custom, or argument. Like, things are put upon you. You are forced to do things. I have a friend who's a medical doctor. She went to medical school and they said, as a doctor, you will have to perform an abortion if you want to graduate from this school. The professor absolutely hated her because she was a Christian. She said, the only abortion I'm performing it on is a child that's already died, to remove it from the womb. But if that child is alive, I'm not performing any abortions. And she had it out with the doctors, you know, the teachers. I mean, but you know what? That happens. And it's going to happen to you guys if it hasn't happened already. Not necessarily that, but something of that, you know, effect. It's going to happen. Persecutions, narrowness of a place, or a narrow place. It can also be a calamity or a dire affliction. Now, these things are the things that are promised to us for walking with God. You're promised persecutions. You're promised that people will hate you for God's sake. You're promised that you're going to get zero respect. And you're promised that the world's going to come against you. You're promised that you're not going to find your place, your portion in this life. Still interested? That's what you're promised. That's the Bible, folks. You're promised these things. For Christ's sake. Now, this is an interesting word here. It's on behalf of, or for the sake of, or beyond, more than. But it doesn't say for Christ's sake. That was kind of added by the translators. It actually says for the anointed. On behalf of the anointed. For whenever, in that moment, as long as, look, feeble is weak, feeble, powerless, and without strength. Then, at that particular time, at that specific time, and strong is able, powerful, mighty, mighty in wealth and influence, strong in soul, to bear calamities and trials with fortitude and patience, strong in Christian virtue, to be able to do something, to excel at something, or have power for something. See, strange things happen. Losses, I rejoice in these things. I rejoice in my infirmities. I rejoice in my persecutions. I rejoice in those things that come against me, the reproaches. And I rejoice in distress. For the sake of the anointed. Because then, when I am weak, I am strong. See, this is actually a sweet promise. You see, we think of these things and we want to run. But God says, run to them. Do not run from being ridiculed, and do not run from your infirmities. And do not run from the things that come against you. Because the very moment those things happen, at that instant, God's strength comes in. And it is for the sake of the anointed. Yes, it is for the sake of Christ, but Christ is like we are in Him, and we are anointed also. And God says, when those things come against you, I come in with all the fullness of my strength on your behalf. Because, yes, for Christ, but also for you. You are my anointed as well. See, that's why Paul rejoiced. See, my strength is not as great as God's strength. And my wisdom is not as great as God's wisdom. And my ways are not God's ways, and my understanding is not His understanding. But God says, when those things come against you, in that very moment, I will give you all of my strength, all of my might, and it will be working on your behalf. See, why do we lay down in green pastures in Psalm 23? Because we can. Why did God say, fear not? Because He knows who He is. Why did God say, like, who can be against you? If I am for you, who can be against you? Because He is greater than any other. Why did God say, who can separate you from the love of God? Because He is the one who's drawing you with that love. See, there are certain things that do not seem to make sense in the world, but they make sense to the Christian. You see, the world will scoff at you and the world will laugh at you for these things, but they are the glory of God. They do not recognize the glory. I saw a video the other day, showed it to my students, unfortunately. I didn't remember this part, wasn't it? And the announcer said, you know, they were talking about, you know, kind of from a philosophical standpoint about God a little bit, and, you know, the origin of life and stuff. And they say, oh, but perhaps we are God. We are deity. And isn't that really what it's about in the world? Trying to make yourself deity? Don't go for the persecution. Don't go for the ridicule. You are God. Where do you think that came from? Even better.
Satan.
Isn't that what Satan said? I will make myself as the Most High. I will exalt myself above the stars of the heaven. The world says, exalt yourself. God says, be humble. The world says, be somebody. And God says, you're nobody apart from me. But the beautiful thing is, if Christ is in me, who could I possibly be that is greater? I mean, who is greater than God? And yet God says, I am in you, and I make my home in you, and I will never leave you nor forsake you. Who can be greater than you? If God calls me His beloved, the Creator of the universe calls me His beloved, and He calls you His beloved, then who can be greater than the beloved of God? God says, narrow is the gate, right? And straight is the path, and narrow is the gate. Narrow is the way. What does the world have to offer? See, part of that narrowness is in the persecutions. God says, you want to come towards me? Get ready to face some persecutions. Get ready to face some rejection. But you know what? That straight path and that narrow way, although there may be some persecutions, what are they all about? Well, God says, if you suffer with me, you reign with me. So many people say, don't suffer. Do everything you can not to suffer. God said, if you suffer with me, you reign with me. You can't reign with God unless you're willing to suffer with Him. That anointed also means another anointed. It also means someone who's being persecuted. You see, am I willing to stand to the person who's going to stand up for God? Am I willing to stand with that person? Or am I going to just casually walk away and say, oh, well, that's your business? You know, Christians do that. We walk away from the ones who are facing the heat. And God says, you're not suffering with me. But not all Christians do. Some Christians stick right there. Yeah, I'm with you all the way. You know, those Christians are equally rewarded as the one who's actually facing the heat. You know, there's an interesting walk we have. God's kind of a curious guy. See, His ways don't make sense to our natural minds. If I want to find my life, I'll lose it. Like, preserve my life, I'll lose it. But if I want to lay down my life, I will find it. Now, what sense does that make? You don't lay down your life for the other guy. Hey, look out for number one. He who has the most toys at the end wins, right? That's the way to live, so the world says. And God says, you can't take those toys with you. I heard a great joke one time. Some guy loaded up, you know, it's going to go to heaven. And the angel came down and said, you can take one suitcase with you. Take anything you like. You can have a suitcase. And the guy got all the gold he could find and he stuffed it in the suitcase. And he went up to heaven with his suitcase. And one angel looked at him and said to another angel, why did he bring pavement? You know, there is a life beyond this life. There is no such thing as death, because what God has done, no man can undo. Even the fall could not bring actual death. It could bring separation, and it could bring that kind of death. And it could bring death in our physical bodies, but it could not really bring death, because life is from God, and what God does, no one can undo. I read a book recently, a guy who had died. And he was declared dead by parents. He was hit by a tractor trailer. It drove over his car. And he was a Baptist preacher. And he died. And another preacher, unknowing who it was that was in the car, turns out they had known each other. Another preacher's driving by on the same road, and he gets caught in this big traffic jam where traffic was blocked off in all directions. And the paramedics were already on the scene, and it was a tremendous backup, miles long, because it was only a two-lane road for a very long distance in Texas. And this Baptist preacher made his way up front, because God had told him, go pray for the person in the car. So he goes up and he's going to go pray for the person in the car. And he climbs into the back of the car where it was still a little bit of space, and he climbs in and he grabs the man's arm and he feels for a pulse. And this second preacher who came in, you know, he used to be a Vietnam War medic, and so he knew what he was looking for, and the paramedics had declared the guy dead. And he climbs in there, yep, sure enough, the guy's dead. And God says, pray for him. And now, to a good old fashioned Baptist preacher, you don't pray for the dead. But God said, pray for him. And he said, pray for his brain and pray for his internal organs. So he started praying. Although it made no sense to him at all. And for 90 minutes, this man had no pulse. He was dead. And he had gone to heaven. In 90 minutes, he woke up. And you know what he was doing? Singing the praises of God. You see, this man had gone to heaven. And he met his family there. And he met him outside the gate of heaven, and he was coming towards the gate. And all these people who were Christians and who were dear to him came to meet him. See, he realized that when we get there, there's a welcoming committee. We're going to be welcomed by our loved ones. We're going to be welcomed by those people who are dear to us. And those people, it was interesting to him. He never quite figured out why some of those people were there. And then he realized later on those people had a tremendous impact one at one time or another on his life. An old friend, an old high school friend was there to meet him, and his grandfather was the first one to give him a hug. And they would hug him and they would kiss him and they would welcome him. And then he realized this, he was like the sounds. He said the sounds were the things that really got him. It was wonderful to see the people, but the sounds were there. And he said he heard angels' wings. He didn't actually see the angels, but he heard their wings. And he said they were like songs of praise. And he said that as he started, you know, pulling toward closer to the gate, he was a little bit surprised because he had heard about the pearly gates, but they weren't pearly. It was kind of like a luster of pearl. But they weren't actually made of pearl. They had a kind of like a pearl-like shine to them. And he said the gate was much narrower than he anticipated. The actual entry was fairly narrow. And beyond the entry, he could see the streets of gold because there was a city there. And as he was getting closer to the gate, he realized he was hearing hundreds, maybe thousands of songs being sung. They were praising God. And he said, curiously, he didn't hear any songs about the blood, and he didn't hear any songs about the cross. He only heard songs about the glory of God and the things that God was doing now. And how glorious he is now. And he knew that if he had started, he said in life he never had a very good voice, but he knew if he had started to sing, he would have a very beautiful voice because everybody there had a beautiful voice. And he said he had experienced sensations and seen colors and heard things that he could not fathom and that he could not find words to adequately explain. You see, people have died and gone to heaven, and some people have gotten just a heart vision of heaven that was completely scriptural. And they saw things. They saw the colors in heaven. And they said these colors were nothing like you could imagine on earth. And I never really could quite get that, but then one time I flew south at sunset. Flew to Venezuela. And just as the sun was setting, and I swear, the colors that were up way up in high in the sky, they were colors I've never seen before. And yet they say these colors are in heaven. And they heard things they never heard before, and they saw things they never could imagine seeing. I know one person who saw the white throne judgment. A white throne judgment was a sobering place. And it made him realize the importance of what we do here. You see, the world tells us that this place is wise and great. God says this place will pass away. The world tells us that this life is something that you really got to build up in your own strength and your own abilities. God says you have no abilities. Lay it down. The world tells us we have to be some kind of somebody. And God says, the only man who is good is God. The world has nothing to offer. See, there is a reward for following God. The world doesn't recognize it. The world doesn't know that because they don't know Him. This man didn't see the reward. He just saw the gate. But it was the most glorious place he's ever seen. Beyond words, he could not describe it. The white throne judgment is going to be a place where people die, where people cry buckets of tears, and it's not going to be the unsaved that are crying, it's going to be the saved. See, we're going to be sitting there in the grandstands watching. And each soul is going to come up one by one, stand before God, except they won't be able to stand before God because the Bible says that there is no place found for them in heaven. And they're going to come and they're going to try to stand before God, but they cannot. So they will be here and there, and then they will be over there, and then they will be over here, but there is no place found for them. And as they are before God, He's going to show them every opportunity they had to become Christians. And He's going to show certain people things. And people are going to see loved ones standing before the white throne. And this one man I know who saw the white throne judgment. So to people in his church. He's a preacher. He's people in his church that he knew, teenagers, were there at the White Throne Judgment. And one person in particular, because I kind of believe I know who this is. His son looked at the father who was saved, and the son was not, and he said, "It was your anger that kept me from Christ." You see, we're told, express yourself. If you're angry, let it out. Tell me how you feel. Don't get me wrong, God is intimately concerned with how you're feeling. We don't have a God who cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. Tell it to God. It's not wrong to be hurt, and it's not wrong to be angry. The wrong comes in, what do we do with it? You see, there's going to be buckets of tears. Some scholars say when we get to heaven, God's going to pull back the gates of hell and show us what we were saved from. That's not something I'm really looking forward to. I'm not actually looking forward to the white throne either. But it's coming. There's another place in heaven called the Bema Seat. The Bible calls it the judgment seat of Christ, but that's not a very good translation. Because we're not there for judgment, we're there for evaluation. And that's the evaluation of the believer. And some people are going to rejoice greatly, and they're going to get the tremendous rewards, gold, silver, and precious stones. They're going to get crowns. There's a crown of righteousness for those who've kept themselves pure. There's a crown of rejoicing for the soul winners. There's a crown of life for those people who ate this word. There's a crown of glory for those people who shared this word. God made a pretty big deal in the Bible about the rewards. See, we Christians are kind of funny. We get into this pseudo-humility. Oh, I'm not in it for the rewards. Well, I understand what you're saying. I know you're not in it for the rewards. But you know what? Why do you think God put those rewards in the Bible then? Apparently he said, maybe those rewards can be a little bit of a motive. Now, this is a real place. People had been there. There was a man who was in the hospital. And he had severe heart problems. And he would keep going into cardiac arrest. But he could feel it coming. And he was in the intensive care unit, and every time that, you know, that he would feel it coming, the nurses gave him a little call button that he could hold in his hand. And they told him, when you feel it coming, just squeeze the button. And that was their signal. And he would squeeze the button. By the time they got in the room, he was in cardiac arrest, but not so long that they couldn't get him back again. And this went on several times. And when he died the first time, an angel was standing there. And an angel met him. And he put his arms around him to take him to heaven. And then he was brought back. A second time, the angel came back again. And this time, they actually got a little farther because it took a little longer. But then he brought him back again. The third time, it took a while. And he was going, and the angel was actually flying with him over the city, this magnificent city, a place like he's never seen before, with streets of gold. And he brought him back again. The next time he didn't press the button. This is a real place. See, there's a man who died. He was a musician, I think. I don't remember. Maybe he was a preacher. I don't know. Well, as he was dying, and his heart stopped beating, he saw two angels. And the one angel was his angel, and the other angel was sent by God to escort him. And the one angel said to the other, and this is his story, he was saying, it's that the one angel said to the other angel, aren't you here to take him back? And the angel that came said, yeah, but only if he wants to. See, Jesus gave up his spirit. It wasn't taken from him. You think your decisions aren't valuable to God? He won't even take you before you're ready to go. If you don't want to go, he won't take you. Remember my friend Tony when he was dying of cancer. Doctor said he should have been dead 2 months before he died. Because it was completely throughout his entire body. But he wasn't willing to die. And I asked him one time, because he had just finished a very difficult round, and at this point it was, everybody knew that this was, you know, not going to work. And I asked him, Tony, are you going to go for another round? Because it made him really quite, you know, uncomfortable, and it was a difficult ordeal for him. And Tony said, I don't think so. This was about those 2 months before he died. See, Tony wouldn't go until his family was ready. He said, my family's not ready. I'm not going anywhere. And the day that he died, Tony's best friend was there in the room. And Tony, his wife had left, and his best friend put his hand under his head. And he said, Tony, your wife's gone. You see, it would have been hard for her to watch him die. Tony, your wife is gone. This would be a good time. So Tony just shut his eyes and he went home. But before he died, he saw God. Just like Stephen had. See, this is a reality, folks. I'm not saying that to make you sad, and I'm not saying that to make you scared. But this is reality. There is a place called heaven. And it's a place that's welcoming us. And then there is this person named God who created everything. And he says he loves you. And that he draws you with an everlasting love. And that he deals with you according to mercy and not according to anything harsh. You see, the world says that he doesn't exist. But you know what? If I look around, I see that he does. I see that he does exist. You see, they try to tell me that this building was built by chance. I think it wasn't built by chance. I think this building was built by people. They try to tell us that the universe was built by chance. I don't think so. I think the universe was built by God. Because there is intelligence and order there. Who do you think is behind the world telling you those things? Perhaps there is one who says, I will be like the Most High. That doesn't want you to know God. You see, we take our decisions so casually and so lightly. We think they don't really matter. And how is it that God will show us every single decision we ever made at the Bema Seat? And He will reward us for some. And others will become wood, hay, and stubble that get burned up. Do our decisions matter? Do what we think and do? Do our words matter? The pastor of our church right now, Pastor Schaller, was a missionary way back when to Finland when he was a young man. He walked up to a woman and God said, talk to her. You don't do that in Finland. People don't just talk in Finland. But he went up to her. She was waiting at a bus stop. So he went up to her one evening and he started talking to her. She wouldn't even look at him. He said, God loves you. He died for you. He has got a beautiful plan for your life. And if you accept Him into your heart, He'll come in there and He'll make you His child. And He'll implement that beautiful plan for your life. And He has beautiful things in store for you. That woman wouldn't even look at him. And he gave her a tract and he walked away. Now 5 years later, his church had grown some. At that point, he still hadn't had a church. But 5 years later, he had a church. And he had a good team there. There was a lady on his team who was talking to a woman, and they were looking through a scrapbook. And the woman said, "Hey, stop. That's the man. That's the man." She said, "What are you talking about?" "That's the man. 5 years ago, this man told me about Christ." She got saved. You see, there is a God who is real. And there is a real place called heaven. And you're going to go there. And there's a real place called hell. And people go there. And not one person in history was ever meant to go to hell. But more people go to hell than to heaven. Now, no man has an excuse. But I kind of shudder to think what would happen if I know that people are going to hell and I did absolutely nothing about it. Like, what would be my portion at the Bema Seat? Because it's coming. It is real. Heaven is a real place. Our decisions are real. We take them so easily and so for granted as though they are not a real thing. As though they have really no effect. Do I go here or do I go here? I don't care. I don't need to pray about it. I'll just think, oh, what's my preference at the moment? But I don't need to pray. I have a brain in my head. Well, you know, if I'm over here going to the left and God wants me to meet somebody over here to the right, I'm never going to meet them. There's a little bit of a problem. Maybe that's that woman that talked to Pastor Schaller that time in Helsinki who 5 years later would get saved. That was Pastor Schaller. He's another one of our pastors. He's really cool. I led a woman's father to Christ 23 years ago and she found him in Africa. Of all things, she just happened to run into him and he's street preaching in Africa. She said, "You won my father to Christ." Folks, these things are real. They're not thoughts or ideas. They're not theologies. They're real. This is a book of reality. You want to know what is real? Learn what's in this book. This is reality. Heaven is reality. Hell is reality. This book is reality. God's Word is reality. Christ really did come in the flesh. He really did die on that cross. And He really does have a plan for your life. It is reality. The things that are real are in this book. The things that are not real are what you can see. It doesn't make any sense. I would think that that which I could see is real, and that which I cannot see is not. But faith is the evidence of things hoped for and the conviction of realities unseen. It's a conviction. It's really there. Interestingly enough, though, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word will never pass away. This book will never pass away. What's more real, heaven and earth, or this book? If it can pass away, I don't think it's real. It's transient. It's not real. Oh, but my emotions are real. My thoughts are real. My affections are real. Yes, they are a real part of your physical body. But your physical body will pass away too. This book will never pass away. There is a place. You're only here for a short... my life is but a vapor. God says, what, 80? And I'm hoping for a little longer? Right? But there is a real place. It surprises me sometimes. A couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine died. More and more of my friends are dying, and I'm not that old. You know, it's going to happen to you too. When I was 17 years old, a friend of mine died. Ever since then, my friends have been dying. Here and there and everywhere. And some of my friends don't die, thank God. But you know what? I'm going to die too. And I don't know when that is. And no man can tell except God, because that date has been set by God and nobody else. And nothing can change that fact. Only God can determine when I go home. It is God's decision and God's decision alone. Nobody and nothing can determine that. Oh, by the way, I don't care how many times you've been shot, or I don't care what disease you got, or I don't care what's going on in your life. Only God can determine when you go home. Nobody else, including you. Yes, I give up my spirit, but I have to do it in God's time. I mean, we've all heard of people, for example, trying to commit suicide and live. It's not that hard. But it just said God said no. I mean, if the sparrow cannot fall to the ground without God's approval, how can I go anywhere without God's approval? There's nothing in my life that can happen that doesn't get God's approval. The same God who says, I love you with an everlasting love. Nothing can happen without God's approval. And if God chooses that I live, I live. If God chooses I die, I die. But nothing happens without God's approval. And by the way, when I do die, it's just an address change. If I were to die tonight, I'd see all of you there. Just a spit of a time. It wouldn't take any time at all. And I'll tell you one thing. It ain't going to happen without God's approval. Now, I'm hoping for a little better than 80, and I'm hoping that's for all of you too. I'm hoping for the rapture. But I'll tell you what, there's a place I'm going, and there's a mansion there. And God says He personally designs it. And when I get there, I'm going to see my friends. And eventually I'll see you there too. And then that's where the party really begins. But the place is real. This is not. You're not going to be here for that long. If you live to 110, you're not going to be here for that long. You got one shot at your decisions. Oh, sure, there's recovery if you fail. But why fail? Why lose those opportunities? You know, why not just make them right decisions? Satan's going to attack your decisions. That's what he attacks. He can't make you do anything. He can put an illusion in front of you to get you to do things. But it's just an illusion. You know what fear is? Fear is an illusion. Fear is the illusion that God is not in control and that He doesn't love you. That's where fear comes from. But it's just an illusion. See, I don't have to be afraid to walk with God, and I don't have to be afraid of what's coming, because I know what's already coming. It's written in this book. Anything else, it's an illusion. It's not real. If it can pass away, it's not real. What is real is what cannot pass away. This book right here. This is reality. This will never pass away. I'm going to pass away in my physical body. Interesting thing about that man. When he was up at the gates of heaven, he said he never felt so alive. And I was kind of curious at that man saying he never felt so alive. See, these things don't make much sense with God. God is not a God of natural reasoning. God is a God of the Word of God, of a mind that is greater than my own. And He says He loves you. And He says that He is real. Amen.